When I moved to Park City, I would send photos to my friends back in Los Angeles of all these amazing hikes I was going on. Just, you know, normal local hikes. I was so proud of myself for getting outside and taking advantage of what this incredible place has to offer. Then I heard about these moms around town who take outdoor fitness and adventure to a whole other level. And when you live here long enough, you know exactly what I mean. Hike Mount Temp in the morning and go for a run in the afternoon, all while pushing a stroller. And then I was lucky enough to become dear friends with a group of women who are somewhere in the middle. They're all moms of thriving children and absolutely rocking it as professionals. Megan Trainer is a champion downhill skier and boss fundraiser for several Park City nonprofits. Dania Lees lived the life of Noah Wiley from the TV show The Pit while she was an ER doc in Chicago, and now she works at the ER here in Park City's hospital. Lucky us. Dina Stewart is the owner of Mathnasium. She's making all of our kids smarter. Carolyn Gus is a C-suite executive at a global tech company and marathon runner. And Sam Daniels is an incredible artist and executive producer also at a global tech company. So you would think with some downtime, they might enjoy a nice lunch with an Aperol Spritz. But not these moms. They took their adventurous spirit to the Havasu Pie Falls hike in the Grand Canyon this past fall. Their experience was life-affirming, life-changing, and death-defying, and the stories they came back with have had us all entertained and wondering, why on earth would you do this with your downtime? So let's hear why and learn a little something. Spoiler alert, don't forget the satellite phone. Okay, all right, you guys, let's do this. So I'm lucky enough to be sitting here with some of my closest friends here in Park City, and we're here to talk about this amazing backpacking trip that they took that I thought they were all insane for doing. But I wanted to ask Carolyn, were you the one that originated this trip?
I was the instigator of the trip. It was the beginning of this year, and I was thinking about some kind of fun adventure. And my happiest times are being outdoors with friends, preferably off the grid, no mobile coverage. And I was thinking through, okay, where would be a fun trip to go? Because every time I go on a trip in the outdoors with these ladies, I grow a lot, and our friendship grow and our bonds grow. And so I thought of Havasu Pie Falls because I don't know if you've ever Googled it, but the pictures are stunning. Mm-hmm. It is kind of a microclimate. It's in the bottom of the Grand Canyon. And yeah, it has like palm trees and lush blue waterfalls, and it's just not what you would expect. You would think there's kind of a desert down there, but it's actually really lush and really stunning. So I thought about that, and I just put it out there to the crew. Does anybody want to come? I didn't give them any details. It's better not to give the details up front. It's better to just commit the people. Like, jump off the cliff and then figure out how you're going to land. So right. That's how I signed up these ladies, these victims.
Victims. There we go. Now we're speaking my language. It's the victims.
You just say yes, and then you figure it out.
That's right. Okay, so Megan, you seem, I mean, you and I have known each other the longest out of this crew, and I know you guys, all the pictures of all the things you've all done, you're all out there a lot with backpacks. But compare your trips in the past to something like this.
I was the one who said, yes, I'll come. And then the week of, started figuring out where exactly we were going. I think once we were there, I was so struck by where exactly we were. I mean, this is a really cool kind of secret spot that doesn't seem so secret anymore. There were a lot more people there than we had thought there would be. But a really beautiful place in the Grand Canyon and a place of the world that I haven't spent a lot of time. There's so much there. It's so rich in culture and history, and it made the trip that much more. And the memories and everything we did there just so much more enriching for us, and it was really special.
I didn't know that anything about it till I heard about it from you guys. So, Dania, please tell us a little bit about what you learned, or tell us about the Havasu Pie, your experience of them.
It reminded me of, actually, I did a medical mission trip in medical school to Native American tribes in Alaska. And this situation where it's very remote and things are flown in, I remember back in school when I did this, I was flying on little prop planes to different tribes, and just the minute I arrived there, it reminded me of a little bit what that was like, just to see the helicopters coming in and out, and they have their own community, you know, at the base of this canyon that's completely remote and isolated, you know. And to them, this is life. But yeah. To someone like me, who was spent, I don't know, 23 years in Chicago, It's a very different environment.
It's funny though, because we met this little boy coming home from school and we start chatting to him. I don't remember. Do you guys remember his name?
No.
When you say coming home from school, coming home from his school.
His school, so in the Havasupai tribe community down at the bottom of the canyon. And we start chatting with him and he says, "Where are you from?" And we told him we come from this place called Park City and there's snow there. And he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry that you have to live there and that you don't just get to live here and see the waterfalls every day." Not very many of the Havasupai tribe leave. They're born, they live there, that's their life. And that seemed wild to us because you can only get in by foot or by helicopter. So to hear that perspective from him, "Oh, I'm sorry that you have to live somewhere that's not here," was a really good reminder about just like the natural beauty and appreciating where you live.
Wow. So Sam, was there any surprises for you in terms of the Havasupai people and what you were going to see?
I knew about the airlifting of goods in and out, just how remote it was. You know, it was 10 and a half miles hike down into the canyon for us to just get to the village. And then the campground was another 2 miles beyond that. I think the biggest surprise, I'm not going to speak for all of us, but I think was just how hard the hike was on the second day we were there. We hiked into our campground, set up camp, and then there's the confluence hike that we chose to do the second day, which I think was like 17 miles.
Explain the confluence hike.
The confluence is where the blue-green water of the Havasu River meets the Colorado River. So Colorado is quite, you know, murky and brown. And the Havasu River is this beautiful, like light emerald blue-green. And so the contrast of that where they meet and kind of swirl together at the mouth of where the river meets the river is this just swirl of color. But to get there, you have to do this really treacherous hike, I would say, that involved like climbing down cliffs with chains that were kind of bolted in and like these sketchy rusted stairs and a little bit of actual rock climbing, which none of us are climbers. So and charging rams. We had one moment of charging rams.
So when did the ram charge you?
Megan had to save us because we had turned and ran.
Yeah, yeah.
And afterwards, Megan goes, "So guys, you don't turn and run because the ram will just chase you. You get your poles."
Oh.
That was your technique,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, living here, we should know
bang
that.
Bang the poles.
Like, you don't
scare the ram
moose.
Off.
You don't run from a ram.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We lost our minds in the moment.
Yeah.
Is that true, that you don't run from a ram?
I mean, my technique. Yeah. I had ski poles in my hand.
What else? Rattlesnakes?
Oh, rattlesnake. There's that too.
Did you have snake bite kits and all that?
No. What worried me. Yeah.
And we didn't have the satellite phone, so we were really well prepared.
We did discuss what we would do.
That we would
tourniquet
Megan's leg.
Talk about that, Dave.
Someone would suck the bite out.
Several people that said they would suck the bite out. I do believe somebody offered urine.
We got confused in our survival skills.
None of which are evidence-based, just so you know. The correct answer is go ahead and tourniquet.
Right. So if a rattlesnake bite had happened, Daniel, what would you have done?
I would have tourniqueted the extremity, and then I would have said goodbye, because guaranteed there's no anti-venom within miles and miles of that place.
Oh my goodness gracious, ladies. Oh my gosh.
So I think just that whole day was hiking
multiple
through water.
Times.
That was the biggest surprise. I don't know that any of us had properly done research on that hike, but that kind of made it even more amazing. Like, we, at the end of the day, were so relieved to be alive and had seen something amazing and came away unscathed even. So
there, I think over the course of our 3 days there, we hiked over 50 miles. Everyone is always willing and positive, but there were times on our hikes, whether it was the hike in, whether it was even just setting up camp in our campground, there are all these little moments where you just have to look around and realize, like, okay, we're in this, we're doing this. There were a few times that some of us, all of us, wanted to turn back or not go down the slippery rock cliff. Our amazing doctor led us through. She led us through.
I was gonna say to ask Dina, because, you know, when we were hiking before this, when you were prepping for it, and you and Megan and I hiked one day, and I saw you guys put rocks in your backpack. So explain that you guys were carrying in everything, and everyone told me you're getting mules, but I guess there were no mules to be found, or was there a mule?
We found out that we did get mules, thankfully. Otherwise, we would have been, our packs were about 35 pounds each. We actually had to lose some weight for the mules. bottles. I think the max was 33 pounds.
What did you lose? The bottle of tequila or what?
We did not take any tequila in, sadly.
Or any alcohol. No alcohol is allowed on the reservation and on the campground.
And we followed the rules.
I was going to say, does everyone follow?
Not many follow the rules. Yeah.
Other people did not, but we are rule followers. Well, actually, we did go and ask the neighbors for some of their alcohol, and they said no. And then later they came and gave us a stick of gum to make up for it.
Have you done anything like this before in your life?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely the first time I have carried my own. And we did have to carry it from the village. You know, we met with the mules and had to carry, you know, our packs for part of the way. And it was just really thinking through what we needed to take for a three-night period was a little terrifying, frankly, because I thought, what if I forget something? So I definitely overpacked.
Dina brought all the snacks.
All the snacks.
Yes, she carried everyone's food. We also carried our own food, but she carried enough food for everyone.
I mean, the thought of running out of food was terrifying. You know, I guess I could have done some research. There was a village with a cafe.
Now, was it on purpose that I mean, Daniel's a dear friend, but she also happens to be a doctor, an emergency room doctor. Was that part of your plan, Carolyn, to have a doctor on your trip?
On the record, I invited Daniel because I like her. But it was reassuring to have a medical friend there with us, because as Sam said, there were some very sketchy moments.
From a doctor's point of view, what was the most risk to your life part of this whole thing?
Biggest health concern or dangerous part was the hike down into the waterfalls, because honestly, I even paused and was like, okay, like one misstep or loss of grip could really lead into like a devastating fall.
And so what in God's name made you want to do it?
We didn't know about that particular stretch. Honestly, that climb down, I think all of us got to that point. We couldn't find it for a little while, actually, because you had to climb through a tunnel to get to it, just a rock tunnel.
It is advertised that this part of the hike, the Mooney Falls, it's, you know, hike at your own risk. So it's not necessarily that people who visit Havasu Pai and stay in the campground, they all do this hike. It is very much a opt-in too. Mm-hmm. But I will say what made us do it is that we were already in it. Mm-hmm. Like we were there, we had woken up at 4:30 in the morning. We all were on the same page. We all said, we're doing this. As hard as it is, we're gonna do it together. We're gonna get there and we're gonna get back. As hard as it was to overcome some of those, you know, physical challenges and mental challenges, truly, we're already in that headspace where we are going to go, or, what do we come for?
What did you, need any kind of equipment to get down? And how many feet are we talking? Give us a...
It's like a four-story building.
How steep.
Okay.
Maybe more.
And how haphazard. You know, it was very put together in pieces. You know, there's a post, an iron post, or a little rickety ladder here, and some chains, and then a rope. And it looked like it was originally from the mining times there. And
I was going to say, who built those things?
Somebody, Mooney.
Mooney did it.
It was named after the guy who died falling down
right.
It.
Mooney was
the first person to die.
We learned about this on the ride home. We also learned that this hike...
So this was an ignorance is bliss trip.
Didn't we read that it's sketchier than Angel's Landing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Did anybody expect it to be that? Like, nobody here.
Okay. No.
So we all kind of were caught off guard, and I know there were, at least for my mouth, some choice phrases, and really considered turning around, because that was the beginning of that day hike, and just thought, you have to do it back up at the end of the day, so that's in the back of your mind, the entire 17 miles.
And racing to get back before the dark.
You asked about equipment. We should have. There should, frankly, be repelling equipment.
Gloves
and Tevas.
Yeah,
who needs more?
I think I went first on the way down.
Is this just your ER adrenaline? I have no fear. I've seen everything.
I mean, I had fear, but I definitely, in my head, was like, oh, we're not quitting now. Like, we've gone way too far, and the minute that I heard that, like, I just wanted to make it to the confluence. The group was like, okay, we're going to have to make a call at 12:30 to turn around because we needed to be sure once we did that part that we got back before it got dark, because we did not want to do that part in the dark. And in my head, I was like, no, we are going to the confluence.
I was scared, but I'm also good at flipping a switch and just being like, this is what I have to do. And that old guy that just passed us, he just did this, so I've got this. Like, I can do this.
So we crossed, I don't know, 20 times, do you think? And there were parts that were more shallow and not as bad, but there were parts where it was above our waist and the water is rushing enough that, you know, if you're not sure of your footing, you're going to get taken downstream a little bit.
Mm. Remember the first river crossing when, like, Dania took her shorts off because she didn't want them to get wet?
We had bathing hiking suits without pants. No, I did not actually have a bathing suit.
And then you reach a point where you're like, never mind. What will be, will be. Yes. We may spend the night out here. I don't really care how I look anymore. I'm not sure why I put this nice outfit together and tried to keep my clothes dry. It doesn't matter. It's just trying to survive.
And that's how you would do it. We would take our hiking shoes off, put our sandals on, walk across the water, put our hiking shoes back on, put our sandals on at the next crossing. And so I think after a while we're like, all right, forget it. We're either hiking in sandals or hiking in hiking shoes. And so that doesn't really help with blisters. When you still have another, you know, 15 miles to hike out.
No. Before we went on the trip, we did a lot of planning. And part of the plan, Sam had the smart idea that we should bring a satellite phone because you just never know because there's no cell coverage. And Dania has one.
I do.
So she put it in the pack and we hiked it down to the bottom of the canyon. And then when we set out on the confluence hike, we were like, oh, Dania, you got the phone, right? We've been going for a couple of hours or something. No, left it back at the campsite. And then Megan made the point, we never told anyone we were doing this. If we die, at what point will anyone know?
Yeah. What was the answer?
Probably when we don't go home on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I think this was Sunday.
Yeah.
No one will know.
Yep. This is not like a national park where there are rangers out and people keeping an eye out. Like, you're
on your own.
You're on your own.
Dan, you want to tell us about the life you saved?
Well, we were walking and we were finishing our hike from the village to our campsite. And there was an older gentleman who was just laying on the ground next to a rock. And he had a friend that was with him. And I knew that probably wasn't a good sign. Because he was just laying there. It was clear, you know, he said that he had been dizzy and then he felt like he couldn't go on. Then he told me what he had drank, and it was surprising to me. He's like a very well-experienced, fit, older man, and he's like, yeah, I had about a liter and a half of water. The reality is it's just too hot, and he needed, you know, to supplement with some electrolytes there. And so it wasn't actually me that saved the life because Carolyn Gus had the liquid IV. And we just basically filled up a water bottle with a liquid IV and kind of hung out with them. The next thing you know, he was starting to feel better.
Wow. We hiked for a while with them, too.
Yeah.
Carried his pack. I think he may have been faking, though, because you end up with his
pack. I carried his pack.
Yep.
but it should be noted that he did not use a mule. He carried his pack, the Hoan. And he had to, I mean, did he ever say how old he was?
I would guess in the 70s.
Amazing.
We were prepared. We had everything we needed except for the satellite phone and anti-venom.
No one died.
We are also
very, very skilled hikers.
We were capable. And
yes,
I would give ourselves a lot more credit.
We're sounding like newbies.
No.
Yeah.
I think if I had known really the intensity of that climb down in, there's a chance that I might have said no, and that would make me really sad. I am just changed and so happy that I went.
So for anyone listening, you should do this hike too. You can do it as long as you're prepared and bring your satellite phone.
I love you all. You're my sheroes. I mean, I was like, I'm kind of jealous. Then I heard about the trip. I was like, I'm not jealous anymore. But I am jealous about the feeling of like, look what I did, you know.
It was
bonding. Okay, you've got to go back to all your busy lives. Thank you so much. Mwah.